This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Yesterday, the music world lost a true innovator.
It's the Les Paul Show.
Hi. Hello, folks. Let's see, I've got my guitar, I got my wife, Mary.
Hi.
And I got a room just loaded with electronics. We've got some inventions here that make one voice sound like many voices and one guitar like many guitars. And by means of these 6L6s and plugging them into this amplifier, why, we managed to...
Well, why don't you grab a guitar and show the people what you can do?
All right, I got a lot of ideas. Here we go. Now, that's one guitar. Now, if you want two, I just throw a switch.
How about three?
Easy. Now, if you want four, switch.
How about five?
It's a cinch. Now, if you want six, here's a half a dozen easy ones.
Guitarist and inventor Les Paul died yesterday in White Plains, New York. He was 94. Les Paul has been called the Thomas Edison of music. He spent his life playing guitar, inventing guitars to play, and inventing devices to record himself on. He invented the solid-body electric guitar, overdubbing, reverb, and multi-tracking, innovations that helped make rock and roll and modern recording possible. But Paul himself stuck mostly to jazz and middle-of-the-road pop. In the 1950s, he had several hits with his wife Mary Ford, such as How High the Moon, Vaya con Dios, and Bye Bye Blues. Les Paul began experimenting with guitar amplification in the 30s. He shattered his right elbow in a car accident in 1948. Once said it would be immovable, so he had it permanently set at an angle that would allow him to keep playing guitar. He was still performing as recently as this June. Terry Gross spoke with Les Paul in 1992 when he was 76 years old. They started with his 1948 recording of Lover, recorded in his garage, which he said was the first recording to combine all his inventions and recording techniques into one bag of tricks.
Les Paul, welcome to Fresh Air. So is that you playing all the parts?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was this the first record that you overdubbed on?
Oh, no. No, I started it in 1933. I started in the 20s by punching holes in my mother's piano rolls. But I did it because the rhythm guitar player and bass player would go home and I'd say, darn it, I wanted to have him play Limehouse Blues, and I wanted to try something. And I'd say, well, as long as they're not here, what I'll do is I'll play the bass and I'll play the guitar and I'll do that. But I never recognized that that could be such a tremendous tool.
What was different on this recording of Lover from anything that you'd ever done before?
Well, the sped-up sound, the echo, the playing the bass line, making a guitar sound like a bass. This is the first time in history that anybody had ever done anything like that. And then to speed the guitar up and slow the guitar down, and you get all these different sounds, but muffling your strings with your wrist, and these were all new things to be exposed to the world. And of course, I had my problems because so many people weren't ready to accept it.
So on Lover, the high, fast, trebly sounds that we hear, that's a sped-up guitar?
Mm-hmm. Along with the normal guitar, mm-hmm. The whole idea there is to be able to get octaves and to go an octave below and an octave above and to do all the harmony parts and everything, you know. And that was not the very first record I ever made that way, but like I say, it was the first. That was the first one to come out, and that came out about a week after I had an automobile accident, where for 2 years I was to be in the hospital, just in a basket. everything I had was broken, and I was in bad shape for about 2 years. So I had a lot of time to think, and I unfortunately didn't have that many records in the can, so to speak. What I had are records that were completely done except for the last part, which was the melody. And the reason I left that melody off is I figured that every week that went by, I got better. And if I got better, why, I had newer ideas. And so I'd leave that last part off. And after the automobile accident, I had to do the next recordings in a cast, a body cast. And so with one arm fixed, right up even with my face in air, the only thing I could move with my right hand was my thumb. So I put a thumb pick on that, laid the guitar. And I had a rack built to hold the guitar horizontal, and it laid there flat. And I just stood up and played my part. And that's how I made the parts for the next four or five records.
This might be the dictionary definition of obsessive.
Boy, I'm telling you, you learn in a hurry to live with the obstacles, and they can be overcome.
Now, let me get to one of the hits that you had. Let's talk about How High the Moon, which you recorded with Mary Ford, one of your big hits.
Thank you.
Let's hear some of it. Record Mary's voice to get that echo?
Well, that was something that I spent 2 years trying to find out. I didn't want reverb like an empty room. I didn't want Carnegie Hall. I didn't want that sound. I said to my friend, very dear friend, he and his girlfriend, Mary was my girlfriend, and myself, and a fellow named Wally Jones, that we were all sitting in a little tavern at Santa Monica and Western out in Hollywood, and Lloyd was arm wrestling with me, and we had a pitcher of beer and some popcorn, and we're watching the fights on Friday night, and he pulled my arm down real easy, and he says, "Les, you're not concentrating. You're usually pretty rough to bring that arm down on." And I said, "Well, I'm thinking of that echo." And I said, "I haven't figured that delay out yet. I haven't figured it out." And he says, "Well, you still worried about that thing?" And I says, "Yeah, I need it, and I don't know how to get it." And he says, "Well, explain it to me again." And so this night, Lloyd, I explain it to Lloyd again. I says, "Picture that you're on the Alps." I say, "Hello, hello, hello, hello." And I said, "I want it to repeat, and I want it to repeat, and I want the delay and the decay, I want to be able to vary it." And lo and behold, he says to me, "You mean like putting the playback head behind the record head?" Oh, boy, I threw $10 down on the table, and I said to Wally, "Pay the bill and bring the girls," you know. And we left him with the $10 bill and the girls and the beer and the popcorn and the TV. We're gone. And by the time they got home, you could hear all over the neighborhood, hello, 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 you know? And we'd found the echo, the delay.
You know what I want to know? Why did you want to have echo on her voice?
That's interesting, because I felt as though when you play the note dry, just dead, it just drops like a rock. And it ends right there. And a lot of times you'd like to have that note hang on after you've left it and go to the next note. And it's very similar to ambience in a room, the sound of a room, where it's enhanced by bare walls. If I happen to be talking to you and I happen to be in a very empty room, you could recognize that. Riding in your car, listening at home, you say, "Well, I can tell that these people are talking in a very empty room," or you can say they're talking in a phone booth. It's so small, or it's a very large hall. So you have command over what you wish to do. And in this case, I didn't want that note to say, hey, and just go on like Carnegie Hall. I wanted to go, hey, hey. See? And now, if you want, you put a little tail on it. You go, hey, 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 hey. You know? And it gives you such command of so many things, the toys to work with. Today, they're not. I call them toys because the kids, they have all these little boxes that you can go in and buy in the store. When I was a kid and I visualized this thing, the reason I had to invent it is because you couldn't buy it in a store. If I wanted it, I had to make one.
Les Paul speaking with Terry Gross in 1992. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're listening to Terry's 1992 interview with guitarist and inventor Les Paul. He died yesterday at the age of 94.
I saw you about a year ago at Fat Tuesdays, a club in New York where you play every Mondays. Mm-hmm. Every Monday, and you sounded terrific.
Thank you.
I understand that you have arthritis of the fingers. How do you play?
Well, after my heart surgery in 1980. They just says, well, you're going to have to do something else because you can't play, your hands are gone. And I only had a couple of fingers on each hand then. Now I have no fingers in the right hand move. They're fixed. And so there's no movement except at the knuckles. And in the left hand, I only have two fingers, really one and a half, because the first finger is half frozen and painful. What do I do? I just have figured out that if I could do that, whatever I did then, I just figure out how to do that with two fingers. And so what I have done is, I says, well, what I used to do with two hands and all my fingers, I'm sure it can be done. And lo and behold, it can be.
So you've really taken the same approach to your body as you've taken to designing instruments and engineering equipment.
Oh, are you? You're great. You're great. Terry, you're great. The key to that is that the same will, the same power that you have to destroy yourself, you can use to make yourself well. If you have arthritis, you just have to have a iron jaw, and you got to go in there and not use any cop out that, well, I can't play anymore because of the arthritis. You just say, there's a way. And I think that determination, I think that, and of course you have to have a lot of luck and you have to have the right genes and all that jazz to go with it. But I think the bottom line is that if you want to hard enough, you can do it.
What's your threshold for pain? How good are you with pain?
Oh, boy, I tolerate pain. It's unbelievable what you can tolerate if you have that, again, if you have that attitude about it. First of all, you got to think up and not down. And first of all, you don't think of work as a dirty word. You think of that as something that is a privilege. When I was in the hospital and the doctor called me in the office and he says, promise me you'll work hard. And I says, Doc, I thought that's what put me in here. And he says, no, Les. He says, nobody died of overwork. Promise me that you'll work hard. So I went upstairs, and they wheeled me upstairs, and I asked the nurse for a piece of paper, and I drew a line down the center of it, and I put plus on one side, minus on the other. This one, that one, all the great things that we've done in my lifetime. And when it came to the end, I looked at the list, and it was overwhelming that the best time I had in my life was playing in a little nightclub. Now, I'd given up the guitar in 1965 and says, let the young kids have it. I've made my money. I'm going to get out and invent and go manage and record and go another direction, but forget the guitar. This piece of paper in 1980 said to me I should go back and play the guitar, and where I was happiest is in a little club. An intimate nightclub. So when I got well, I marched into New York, and I looked at all the clubs, and finally I find this club. And I said, this is my club. So I go to the manager, and he's 6'4". He's a big, tall guy, Scott. And I said, sir, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Les Paul. He says, Les who? I says, Les Paul.
No.
Yeah. Les Paul. And he says, name sounds familiar. I says, yeah, I play the guitar, and I'd like to come in and play in your club. And he says, well, what do you do? What kind of music you play? And I says, you know, darn if I know. I says, I've never been able to put a handle on that one. And he says, well, what have you got? And I says, well, I got a trio, and I'd like to come in here. And he says, well, I don't think we're interested. And I says, not only that, I'd like to be in on a Monday night. He says, we're not even open on Mondays. And he says, no. And I says, but I'm willing to work for nothing. He says, we're interested.
Right.
And so the bottom line was is that I made a deal with the boss. And he says, I'll put you in for 2 weeks. And I'll take the door and part of the liquor and whatever. Went in there for 2 weeks, and the audience reaction was tremendous, and it was loaded, and you couldn't get in, and it was just great.
Are you still inventing, or are you still in the process of creating things?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What are you working on?
We're working on a bass, Les Paul bass, that will be at the NAMM show next week. We're working on all kinds of things. I've invented a thing for piano. I got another thing for high blood pressure. I got all kinds of things.
Something for high blood pressure?
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting into the medical field now?
Well, it's just that...
You need it.
Not that I need it. I saw that that there was room for it in the medical world. There's a lot of things that you recognize if you're lying in bed and you see a guy do something that's the hard way. And you say, you know, how come you're doing it that way? Well, the same thing applies to... it goes all the way back to, Terry, if I can really take you way back, it's the first time that my mother in her home had a radio, a Victrola, okay, that's the gramophone, that's the phonograph, okay, and a player piano, and I'm sitting there with all these things. And I looked at it and I says, you know, there's something interesting here. This piano, I can punch a hole in it wherever I wish, and that note will come out. And I can slow it down and speed up, and it doesn't change pitch. Okay? It just gets slower or faster. If I put my hand on a phonograph record and I slow it down, the pitch changes. Why? And that's the key to the whole thing, that curiosity of that you just asked that question, why, and you got your life cut out for you.
Well, Les Paul, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Les Paul speaking with Terry Gross in 1992. He died yesterday at the age of 94. You can see a slideshow, listen to his music, and hear more remembrances at freshair.npr.org. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.